Well, in the interest of time, we'll kick off. The Institute haven't appeared to shut the door. Thank you to our last entrant into the room for volunteering. Okay, hopefully you're all here today to hear about the general insurance industry and the actuarial profession in 2020. We have four presenters today. The first presenter will be Sylvia Wong. Sylvia is a qualified actuary working as a senior manager with PwC Australia. She has over 14 years' experience in the general insurance industry, including the valuation and review of long-tail and short-tail classes, lender's mortgage insurance, the preparation of financial condition reports, and the pricing and valuation of workers' compensation schemes. Second speaker today will be Garth Brooker. Working in PwC's actuarial team, Garth has 10 years' experience providing actuarial, data management, performance reporting, and operational advice to accident compensation schemes and self-insurers. He recently joined PwC's new analytics practice, where he's looking forward to bringing the actuarial skill set to this multidisciplinary team. Garth qualified as an actuary in 2008. We have Suruchi Singh. Suruchi has been with PwC Australia for 5 years. In this time, she's worked in the general insurance industry, focusing on the valuation and review of short and long-tail classes, including workers' compensation, claims manager remuneration, and the preparation of financial condition reports. Previously, Suruchi worked for 4 years in insurance and reinsurance reserving with XL Group in New Delhi, India. Mudit Gupta. Mudit is a senior consultant with PwC's Sydney Actuarial Practice. His core expertise is in technology implementation testing in the banking industry. He also has experience in subcontractor quality monitoring and producing CTP industry analysis. Previously, he worked in non-actuarial roles in the satellite and manufacturing industries in Bangkok, Thailand. If you'd like to welcome Sylvia.
Thank you for attending our session this afternoon. So what we'll be covering today, we're going to be talking about five mega trends that are expected to impact on the general insurance industry over the next 10 years. What we've done is we've tried to pull together the information on these five trends together in one spot so that hopefully they will provide a bit of a framework in which insurers and actuaries can have a think about how they may wish to respond to these trends. You might have noticed that in your little programs that what our paper was initially about was the Australian actuarial profession in 2020. As we started to write the paper, I guess the topic kind of evolved and it just became a bit, became obvious that we couldn't just focus on Australia because of globalisation and also, the extent to which actuaries will be impacted will really be quite impacted by how the insurers will react to things. Okay, so recently PwC conducted a global study on the trends that will impact on the general insurance industry over the next 10 years. And as you can see in the diagram, there are five trends that have been identified. These include social trends, technological, environmental, economic, and political. We'll be referring to these trends as the STEEP factors, throughout this presentation. Now, because we actually had a lot of material that we've covered in the paper, and because we've only got a 40-minute session, we couldn't sort of fit everything into our presentation. So what we've done is we've tried to pick out the bits that we thought were most interesting. If you would like to have more detail, please refer to our paper. I'll be starting with social trends. So what are we talking about when we're talking about social trends? We're talking about demographic trends as well as behavioural changes, of which the use of social media is one. This is a photo of Shanghai in 1990. And this is a photo of Shanghai in 2010. So just in the short time frame of 20 years, there's been a great change in the landscape of Shanghai and really highlights the demographic changes that have happened since then, which include things like population growth as well as urbanisation. So how will demographic changes impact on the general insurance industry? We see a number of different demographic changes impacting. Some will impact globally and some will be less relevant to Australia, but I guess for Australian insurers who are looking to expand overseas, then the global trends will be important. We're going to talk about three demographic changes here. There's the ageing of the population, which is depicted by the increase in the dependency ratios. There's also the growth in the middle class, as well as urbanisation. So firstly, with the ageing of the population, that's a trend that's going to impact everyone, including Australia. As a greater proportion of the population becomes older, their risk profiles and insurance needs will change. For example, older people, they might be perceived to be better drivers because, or that the fact that they use their cars less and therefore be better risks. The older generation may also be able to afford more than the younger generation. So with this in mind, insurers may want to think about, is that the segment that they want to target with growth? The other thing that insurers might think about is how to best engage with this segment of the market. So as an example, I know of one insurer who's made a strategic decision to employ more older workers in their call centres because that form of communication is mostly used by the older generations. Another impact of the ageing of the population is that natural population growth in some economies will no longer be able to support GDP growth. So the insurer looking to grow may need to make a strategic decision to expand to the economies which will still grow. For insurers who are looking to expand beyond Australia, the demographic changes in terms of the growth in the middle class and urbanisation also become important. With the growth in the middle class, that's going to be mostly driven by Asia. And so as people get wealthier, the demand for insurance will grow. There's some insurers are likely to grow. And similarly with urbanisation, that's the migration of people from country areas to city areas. The demand for insurance in city areas will grow. And with that, in addition to that, there's also going to be a much greater concentration of risks in these areas. So what does it mean for insurers? I guess, they would be thinking about, you know, which sort of markets or customer segments they want to target to achieve growth, and also that there could be some significant changes in their risk profiles if there's going to be a lot of concentration of risk. And so actuaries do have an opportunity to help insurers with their strategies. Next, we're going to have a look at the explosion in the use of social media on insurers and on actuaries. And as you can see in the graph, the number of Facebook users have increased dramatically. It's over 700 million now. LinkedIn was actually started prior to Facebook, but I guess it's not grown about as much. But I guess, you know, the highlight of this chart is just how much we're increasingly using social media. There are three main impacts of social media on the insurer. Firstly, via product innovation. So as businesses have used the internet more, insurers have started to provide coverages for things like cyber risks. But what about for the individual? You know, we're spending an increasing amount of time on social media sites like Facebook. We're also doing a lot more financial transactions through the internet. Is there a potential for insurers to offer products that cover things like data loss or identity theft? I'm going to give an interesting example of product innovation in social media. Has anyone heard of a virtual reality game called Second Life? You can put up your hand. Yep, okay. Second Life is this online virtual reality game that allows its players to socialise and create and trade virtual property. And in 2011, a Chinese insurer actually teamed up with a video games developer to offer virtual property insurance, which is quite wacky. Obviously, we're not sort of saying that, you know, all insurers should flock to that market, but I guess, you know, insurers, you know, may want to keep an open mind in doing product innovation. Secondly, we're looking at the marketing and distribution side of things. So there has been a progressive move away from using intermediaries like agents and brokers and using more direct channels for distribution, and we expect this to continue over time. There are a couple of drivers of this trend. Firstly, insurers are increasingly spending their advertising and marketing costs on social media. For example, there's actually a US insurer who built an office, a virtual office in Second Life. It's manned by employees, and so you, as a player, you can actually go into this office, talk to sales reps, and actually get a real-life insurance quote. Secondly, there's been a rise in aggregator websites, which has made it much easier for customers to compare prices, and that's kind of really channeled all the focus towards pricing competitiveness and away from product differentiation. And so I guess insurers do have an opportunity to be a bit creative in combating this by maybe introducing things like usage-based pricing. Thirdly, there's been an increasing use of online user reviews. I know that when my husband is thinking of buying something, that's the first thing he does is looks up on the internet, you know, which brand is better or whatever. Now, over 30% of consumers in developed countries use online postings in making their buying decisions. And then related to this is group buying. There's sites like Groupon, which offer discounts if enough customers join together in buying a good or service. This is not that prevalent in insurance at the moment, but there actually is a US motor insurer that offers this sort of group buying discount for social networks joining together to purchase motor insurance. And we expect this form of self-pooling to be the way of the future. Lastly, social media is going to have an impact on underwriting and pricing. So first of all, if there's going to be product innovation, that will impact on risk assessments and things just because, you know, you've got a new sort of product design and you don't have a lot of data and experience to analyse. Secondly, the use of social media as a distribution channel will also impact on underwriting and pricing. There's going to be a natural sort of selection effect for just in the fact that you're using social media as a platform for advertising. For example, you're probably going to expect that more of the younger generation are more prevalent users of social media compared to the older generation, and the younger generation probably has less brand loyalty and things like that. And then on top of this, depending on which website the insurer wants to advertise in, that could also impact on selection. So maybe the motor insurer who was advertising on Second Life is hoping that their customers will spend more time in the virtual world than driving in the real world. Now, with group buying, this means that the risks will need to now be assessed at a social network level rather than at the individual level as it is now. Now, has the social network got a healthy common interest? Because if it hasn't, then that could bring significant concentration of risks to the insurer. So think of that, the motor insurer who's offering group discounts for a social network. If you've got, you know, a group of friends who are really into high-performance vehicles and they all go on a road trip together and have an accident, that could bring significant costs to the insurer. And so actuaries do need to think about this when they're estimating claims costs. Social media can also directly impact on risk assessment and underwriting through the construction of social media scores, which Garth will talk about in his section. And then lastly, the use of online user reviews can lead to an erosion in the price elasticity of insurance premiums. And so actuaries do need to allow for this in pricing. I'll leave it to Garth now to talk about technology.
Okay, thanks, Sylvia. Let's see if I can get this going the right way. Excellent. So let's jump straight in. Bit of sort of context and overview for my section. Over the next 10 years, we think the main change from a technology perspective will be a greater reliance placed on external, unstructured, multimedia type data in addition to the more structured data sources that we're used to using today. as actuaries such as claims files and policy files. And a great driver of these data will be the number of internet-connected devices and sensors, which I'll talk a little bit about in a minute, and things like social media. And as an example, social media is already being used to help check for insurance fraud, but we can see the use of a social media score being more and more used. So as an example, this would be where data mining is used to look at customers' blogs and posts from Twitter and Facebook, any product reviews they do or any other kind of uploads that they would put on the internet to gain an idea on them as an insurance risk or their personal preferences for marketing. At the moment, there's already the software available to do that kind of mining, and over time we can see the techniques being brought into professions like the actuarial world to use this information potentially as in areas like pricing and reserving through as indicators of, say, frequency or severity. Okay, so I wanted to talk a little bit about big data, the concept of it. Now, there's whole seminars just on big data, so I'm not going to go into too much detail, but just for a concept of what it is, big data is more than just a lot of volume in terms of data. It's also the types of data and the speed at which it can be processed. So there used to be the three Vs of big data: volume, velocity, and variety. And you could have two, but three was very, very expensive. That's changing now. So with advances in computer hardware and cloud computing, that the cost of storing large amounts of data has come right down. In addition, this is great timing, actually, because we've now got a lot more sources of data. So we've talked about social media, but also internet-connected devices and sensors, so the telematic sensors, which we've heard a little bit about already at this conference. And as an example of the number, sheer number of these devices that are expected to be in place by 2020, it's projected there'll be 50 billion internet-connected devices globally. This is more than just sort of smartphones and tablets. It's also things like GPS systems, back-to-base alarms, and even in the medical world, things like heart rate monitors and so on. And as these are taken up more and more by consumers and by businesses, we can see there being opportunities for the insurance industry to get closer through their customers and help manage risks both for themselves and for their customers through the use of these kind of devices. Now, with all of this extra information, it obviously needs to be processed and analysed, and that takes a lot of effort. But there's software out there already, like Hadoop, that allows vast algorithms to be run across multiple machines, really speeding up processing time and allowing some of these results to be presented in near real time. And we also see over the next 10-plus years advances in artificial intelligence, machine learning techniques, really taking a lot of the decision-making out of the process, so things like underwriting may be able to be more automated in the future. Only last year, IBM has their latest supercomputer, Watson, took on two past Jeopardy champions in the US game show and beat them comprehensively. So this showed not just the sheer computing power and information retrieval capabilities nowadays, but the programming and the computer system had to understand natural language and also reasoning in the types of questions and answers that get done in Jeopardy and be able to then respond in a short amount of time to answer. So it just shows the progress being made. Couple of examples where these types of technologies are already being used in the market. So Amy's Claim Assist app allows policyholders to upload photos of the accident at the scene, allows to log the GPS location and also start their claim processing at the time. In the US, we're seeing insurers already. So Snapshot is a product from Progressive, which plugs into a car's computer port and actually logs the time of travel, the kilometres and things like driving style to allow premiums to be based purely on the usage and driving style of the policyholder. So all of this we see, like I said before, help insurers make more strategic decisions and help them drive growth and manage risk by using this more detailed data and more automated processes. And I wanted to give you two examples in particular, where we see this coming through, and that's in personalisation and proactiveness. In the both 2010 and 2012 Our Future Worlds reports from the CSIRO, they identified personalisation of products and services as one of their key megatrends impacting the globe over the next 20 years. And we've already seen through the use of sophisticated data techniques, the commoditisation and of personal lines pricing here in Australia, and that's led to the rise of segment-specific brands, such as what I've got up here. And with more and more data and this analysis and techniques available, we can see that the personalisation of insurance will continue not just through brands but also into products and services. Things like the group buying and so on will continue to continue to grow in personal lines but also move into things like commercial lines as well. And the other big area where we can see this kind of information being used, kind of techniques being used, is in around the proactively managing risks of both insurers and the insureds. So a great example already is Budget Direct's hailstorm warning system, which is based on feeds from the Bureau of Meteorology, and they then send SMS warnings out to their policyholders to let them know when a storm's coming. So obviously lowering chances of claims, but also severities of claims when they can get their cars under cover and so on. So this all sounds great, but obviously there's some challenges to bring all of this to bear. Senior leaders will need to decide on how much they want to invest in these kind of technologies and where to focus that investment, whether it is in marketing and sales or whether it's in product development, risk management and so on. With the systems that insurers currently have in place, could be seen as quite a big investment to move away from the legacy systems. But we see that over the years there will be a real risk that, especially for the bigger insurers, that some of the younger, more agile companies will be able to come in, use some of these technologies, cherry-pick good risks and erode market share. So there's a risk of not keeping up. One way to overcome this, we see, is actually trying to put some of this in place in a smaller scale, see where it works best within an organisation, and then integrate that more broadly down the track. There's an obvious risk of information overload, where there's just too much data presented to be able to make strategic decisions. And one way to overcome this is definitely to be clear on the strategy for using this kind of information and stick to the game plan and not let anything else come in and take you off course. And lastly, there are concerns around the privacy and the use of information that's been uploaded to the internet, you know, for reasons other than what it's been uploaded for. And I wanted to leave you with a quote from a blog from earlier this year. If I collect information on the music you listen to, you might assume that I will use that data in order to suggest new songs or to share it with your friends. But instead, I could use it to guess your racial background, and then I could use that data to deny you a loan. And clearly the jump to insurance is quite a small one. So as a whole, the industry will need to be proactive in defining the boundaries for how we use social media data, and insurers will need to design internal processes to ensure it's used effectively with the right checks and balances. And clearly this is an area I think actuaries should take a role in as well. So from there, I'll pass over to Sarichi.
Thanks, God. So let me just first see. Right. Okay. Let's look at the global trends observed. Firstly, the differences in the growth of developed and emerging markets is quite evident through the higher rate of growth of the developing markets. Secondly, there has been an increase in the rise of interconnectivity of emerging markets. So this graph shows that the trade value between South America, Africa, Asia, and Middle East has grown at a much faster rate over 2002 to 2010 than other traditional routes. And another trend is regulatory changes due to financial shocks. So this graph shows that the regulation expenditures and number of employees for the regulators in the UK and Hong Kong grew at a faster rate after the financial crisis. And then there is an increase in political and social unrest and state-directed capitalism. Now, both these trends have been noticed globally, but it probably impacts the Australian insurers if they are looking to they have a presence or they are looking to expand into countries which have, you know, these trends are strong in those countries. In respect of emerging markets, obviously it provides competition for the local insurers and profitability issues. And then any regulatory change translates into compliance and cost issues for the insurers. And also they may need to think about their risk management strategies, reinsurance, and investment strategies. So where to from here? There are three plausible scenarios. Globalization, so interconnectivity and rise of emerging markets as well as harmonization of regulations may in fact lead to truly global insurance sector, which can be targeted both by domestic and non-domestic players. And then the other extreme is twin track growth, where the emerging markets continue to grow at 8 to 10%, whereas the developed markets experience up 2% growth. And at the same time, regulators, they come up with new regulations, but different regulations and possibly onerous regulations, thus resulting in limited avenues for the insurers. And then, obviously, there's a middle path between these two extremes. The insurers in the developed world, they grow by using the socio-technological trends that we have looked at in this presentation earlier. And also at the same time trying to target the emerging markets. And the players in the emerging markets, they try to reshape their products and try to grow in their local areas while targeting the global market for technical expertise. So those are the three scenarios. And to me, this one seems most likely. However, I'm not an expert. And so let's have a look at some of the key findings from the 15th annual survey of CEOs that PwC conducted. So more than 80% of the insurers expect to build up their operations in East Asia, Southeast Asia, Africa, and Latin America over the next 12 months, as against less than 40% in Western Europe. 28% feel that new financial or product regulations will largely be harmonized because of cooperation amongst governments. And then in terms of concerns raised, 79% were concerned about uncertain or volatile economic growth, 72% were concerned with overregulation, and 36% were concerned with the protectionist tendencies of the governments. So we have looked at these trends at a global level. In the last slide, I thought I'll have a look at it from an Australian perspective. So firstly, Australia has existing strong trade links with Asia, which makes it a better place to benefit from the rapid growth and industrialization in this area, and it puts it in a better position as compared to any other Western country. The multicultural society of Australia, which is quite evident from our team, also places it in a good position, so it's a benefit. Australia has significant technical expertise, both in terms of the insurance product design as well as insurance practices, which the emerging markets can tap into. Lastly, the existing strong regulation environment in Australia. So while the regulators in the other Western countries are going through significant regulatory changes and are looking internally to make their processes more robust, I think Australian insurers are in a much stronger and more stable position. And so given all these factors, I end my presentation with this question. Do Australian insurers have an opportunity to aim at new or emerging markets faster than their Western counterparts? Thanks. And now Mudit will just conclude our presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Suruchi. We just had a look at some of the mega trends or STEEP factors, as we call them, that are going to impact the industry over the next decade. Now, some of these three factors have already started disrupting the business models, but they're also going to accelerate in the very near future. Now, these factors are also forcing the insurers to consider new ways of thinking about geographies, products, customer segments, and channels. Now, what we have done is we have come up with four broad directions that insurers can take as they prepare for the future. So they can either choose to be innovators or expansionists. And in both these directions, they will focus more on the front office functions. So innovators, obviously, is going to focus on innovation, R&D, and technology, whereas expansionist focus will be mainly on growth strategy, sales and distributions, and marketing. The other two are being a fast follower or survivor, and they are more focused on the back end or the back office functions of the insurer. Fast followers are not going to be the leaders, but they will be very agile enough and they'll quickly follow the leaders to establish a strong presence in the market, whereas survivors are only focused on short-term performance and survival, and they will mainly adopt for the innovators and the other people to adopt the technology and then take them forward. Now, regardless of which category the insurers choose to belong to, there are a number of actions that they can still carry out because of the uncertain future and the emerging opportunities. Now, I have a couple of examples here, but due to the time limit, and some of them have already been covered in the social and technological trends with examples of some innovative companies and ideas such as Second Life. I'll just skip to the end and wrap up the section. So what we have done today is we presented a very high-level summary of the steep factors, and we have only picked a few, as it was mentioned in the start. And for more detail, you can read our paper, and also you can read up a more global study on the PwC website. So we hope we have provoked some thoughts and ideas on the alternative paths that you can take as insurers and actuaries to deal with these challenges and opportunities. Thank you.
Now, do we have any questions? And before anyone sticks their hand up, could I ask you, if you do have any questions, if you can come up to the microphone in the center and please give your name and then ask your question. So do we have any questions from the audience? Okay, well, I might kick off with one then. If you had to pick two items that you covered in your paper that you didn't have time for today, what would be your top two issues?
I think the first one would be talent migration, which is... there's two areas where we thought there could be talent migration that are relevant to an insurer. So firstly, the ageing of underwriters has been identified for insurers where you've got, you know, your experienced underwriters are ageing. It's quite difficult to find underwriting talent, especially in commercial lines. So one way in which to combat that would be to channel all your complex risks to those underwriters and then allow business rules to deal with the rest. And related, a second issue with regards to talent migration would be the outsourcing of actuarial functions to, I guess, emerging markets. Insurers are progressively looking to cost cut and increase profits that way. And as actuaries, if that's the strategy that the insurer is thinking of taking on, then the actuary will need to help work out which tasks are most suitable to be outsourced, and also they've got to work out, well, because insurers are still wanting the local actuary to sign off on the work and take responsibility for it, I guess the local actuary will need to work out how they're going to get comfortable with the work that has been outsourced. And the second area is probably in environmental, because that's actually one of the steep trends which we didn't talk about at all, and we didn't really talk about it just because you know, it's been talked about quite a lot in other presentations and things like that. So that mainly relating to climate change and also the increasing prevalence of natural disasters.
Any more questions? If no one else has one, I've just got one more that I'd like to ask. Don't worry, it's not that hard. You mentioned the use of increasing use of information from social media and potentially other sources on the internet, and obviously you raised the privacy issue there. I'm just wondering whether, if that comes to play and a lot more of that type of information is used, whether you're going to see what your thoughts are about the potential for regulation a la the UK bringing in their gender directive.
Yeah, it's a good question. It's interesting. In the big data forums at the moment, there is a lot of talk about that within the industry as to how it may progress. And I think it's still early days. Even within the industry, they're still talking about the potentials of big data and what it can bring without going down the path of actually seeing what people are going to do with it and how they're going to use it. So I think it's going to be the case where if it's used in the right way and then companies can put forward, show that they've got the right checks and balances and so on. And it's the same with the way that sort of financial information, people do lots of, you know, online banking and so on at the moment, where there's, you know, all companies need to have secure websites and things like that. So if people have the right protocols and processes in place, then I think it'll keep getting used and there won't be the need for regulation. But then it only takes one to spoil the party. So it'll be interesting what happens. The other side with this too is that a lot of people are quite free with what they post on the internet. So there's a question of what is personal responsibility versus how companies use what has been posted freely as well. So it's an interesting extra dimension.
Well, if there are no more questions, can I get you all to join me in thanking Sylvia Garth, Saruchi and Mudit, please.